I started out, I had an unusual vision this morning, and I thought maybe it wasn't God, because, you know, the devil parallels everything that God does. So all the New Age stuff, all the psychic stuff, like fortune tellers, they parallel true prophets. So fortune tellers, like with the gypsies, they always used a crystal ball. So we're very anti-crystal ball talk. Well, God showed me something this morning, and it was like I was thinking of the verse of our building here, the hidden riches of the secret place. And everything we do around here, you know, like we got diamond chips and tiny treasures and the ruby room, and everything's based on the treasures of God. Discover God, discover you. That's a good theme for inner healing. So what I saw him do was open this big treasure chest and say, climb in. And I sat down and got comfortable in a corner of the treasure chest, and he hands me this huge diamond. And well, that reminded me of a crystal ball, and I went, oh no, this can't be God. It makes me think of fortune telling, crystal balls, and I don't want to think about this. And he said, it's not a crystal ball. It's a genuine diamond. They're not even shaped. I mean, the devil is such a poor copycat, even when he copies. His crystal ball doesn't even have facets. It's just a round, smooth, it's not even a good crystal. I mean, I have a good crystal, and it's got facets. And it's really cool, because when the light hits it, it throws colors all over the ceiling and all over the walls. But the devil's crystal ball is just plain old glass. It doesn't even throw colors when light hits it. So it's a horrible replica, and it's a cheap copy of what God's diamond is, but he is attempting to copy. By calling it a crystal ball, he's attempting to copy the diamond reflections of God. So what does he do with it? He tries to tell you the different things that are going to happen in your life, things about you that he sees in your crystal ball. Well, you have all these aspects to who you are, and that's what God was talking about. The hidden riches of the secret place this morning means the hidden riches of all the aspects of who you are in God, all these aspects of you. And I just saw us like a diamond reflection of God with all these different facets shooting out of our life. And when the light hits a diamond and these reflections of light shoot out, they're all the different parts of who we really are and how he's reflected out of our life, God's glory shining out of us. So if his light hasn't shined into one aspect of who we are, to purify that aspect and to bring the light of God and the revelation of God to that aspect, then his glory is not shining out of that aspect of us yet. So that's what inner healing is about, getting the light of God into another aspect of ourself so that we can begin to be transformed into the image of Christ, and his glory can shine out of that part of our life now. So I saw like a diamond, and it's got like a shining light here and a shining light here and a shining light there. It might have 20 shining lights. But perhaps there's thousands of reflections of God in that life that have not been opened up yet, that are not shining out yet. So inner healing is a way that God wants to shine into a new aspect of you today so that it can shine out of you in that aspect. So I really like it. It's awesome. It's exciting. So we're going to look at the diamond image of God again. Some of the verses are the same we looked at before, but I want to just really own this idea of the diamond reflection of God. Look at Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. I love that verse, because as a female minister, there is in Christ there is no difference. There is neither male nor female in Christ. Is God a girl? I mean, we talked about that before. No, God's not a girl, but he's not fully a man either. He's both. Because if he created man in his own image, in the image, male and female was still the image of God. So we have to realize that we are all the image of God. He didn't create man and then say, from man, I'll take a little piece and make it a little more feminine. He said, I created them both in my image. So God is both male and female. So when he created Adam and Eve in his own image, they didn't look alike. They didn't look anything alike. One had all the parts of a man, and one had all the parts of a girl, and they didn't look alike. I mean, I'm sure she had curlier eyelashes and prettier lips and curves, and she didn't look like him. So God wasn't saying, I made them physically look exactly like I completely look physically. But God took whatever genes in him were a certain color of eye. God's eyes are every color. He has every color in him. God possesses every color. So he just took a little bit of his brown and put it in Shayla, and he took a little bit of his black hair and put it in Hannah, and a little blonde hair. It's funny, we got all three shades sitting in the front row. And he gave some of his blonde genes to Tana for the blonde hair. He gave all the gray to Don. No, just kidding. Harvey got some of them. And he gave Claire all to me. So you'll never know. Yeah, I just keep choking for some reason. Turkey. Cold. What? Yeah, but that's from Sunday, so it's not cold. So the point is, he didn't create them to look exactly like him or be one specific gender, but he created them to contain everything that he is. He created them to contain the genes of his physical, but the character, the personality. And because Adam and Eve were the beginning ones, he had to put a whole lot of different things in them that weren't even reflected in their life, but would come forth in their children. But we are created, and God is so multifaceted that he had to split himself up to create all the humans that ever existed in order to fully reproduce himself. So that's a real exciting thought. Psalm 139:13-16 says, you have possessed my reins. You have covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you. Let's stop right there for a minute. You have possessed my reins and covered me in my mother's womb. God protected us. He created us. He put us in that womb. There is no such thing as an accidental pregnancy. There is no such thing as a mistake, a child that shouldn't have existed because they're illegitimate or a rape, the product of rape. God is the creator of life, and every human created is a reflection of God. The sin was in the act of that rape or the fornication before marriage. That was the sin. But the fact that a life resulted in it was the actual, on purpose, thought out, created reproduction of a reflection of God. And that life is not a mistake. That life is on purpose, very designed. And I don't believe in day after pills that, you know, make sure that you kill the baby that was the result of rape. There was a bloodline there, even in that rapist, that God wanted to preserve. And therefore, he chose life to result, to preserve that bloodline. It might be the only hope of mercy for that entire bloodline, because maybe it even happened to a good woman. It was not her fault, but maybe she will mother and protect and care for that child, and that bloodline will be preserved through that. Every birth is of God. Even every miscarriage, every child that dies at a day or two old, is still designed by God. And I wasn't even going here, but the things that he showed me about the purpose of those lives, that he wanted them born in a human body, and then he wanted to take them to heaven, that he is raising them himself. Some fortunate mother got to birth that child who is chosen to be raised by God in heaven and will live out their purpose. I believe in the 1,000-year reign. They will have a chance to live that life out, but they were raised by God. So it's kind of an honor if you have one of those in heaven that God took and raised. You know, it's a heartbreak to us, but it's an honor also to know that you're part of that. And why he wanted it to be born through you, that's a great honor. So he says, you have possessed my reins, you have covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are all your works, that my soul knows right well. Now, do you hear what David's doing? He's saying, I. You've done a good job on me, God. He's saying, your works, which is me, look what a wonderful job you did making me. But it's not pride. It's not boasting and it's not pride. David got a revelation of who he is. He got a revelation of the transformed David. He just caught a glimpse of what portion of God he gets to be. And he got excited, said, oh my gosh, look who God made me to be. Look what portion of God I get to carry in this life. Look how I get to reflect God. David liked himself this day because he said, good job, God. Wonderfully made I am. Marvelous am I, your work. You did a good job. And my soul, my mind, my emotions knows that right well. We need to know that right well, and that's not pride. That's acceptance of who you are. When we try to be someone else, we don't like ourselves. When we compare ourselves to other people, we don't like ourselves. But when we really find out who I am and whom I'm supposed to be, we get excited like David got excited. Good job, God. I'm just going to accept who I am and live who I am and stop trying to be like anyone else. And then I can be happy with me. My substance was not hid from you when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. To be wrought describes needlework. So I want you to compare yourself to needlework. Has anyone in here done needlework? Yeah, I knew Frankie has done needlework. But you picture, if you can picture a big hanging, beautiful cloth, and if you can look at the back side of it, on the front you're just looking at the picture going, nice. You look at the back and you see all those threads. And you go, wow, millions of threads it took to create that beautiful picture. One little stitch at a time to create one little pink flower around and around and around and around and around, and I come out with one itty-bitty satin-looking flower. We were wrought. We were wrought by God. Everything you are is another little thread from the very image of God. I'm going to take this little thread of who I am and weave it into this one I'm going to call Hannah. I'm going to weave this little thread into her. I'm going to weave creativity. I'm going to weave intelligence. I'm going to weave the teaching. I'm going to weave the compassion. I'm going to weave a beautiful voice. This portion of my beautiful voice, because God has multitudes of frequencies he can sing on. But I'm going to take all these notes right here and weave those into Hannah. Woven, thread by thread, each thread a different reflection of God, creating who you're going to be to reflect God in this life. He has a purpose for everything that he put in you when he made you. Your eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect, and in your book my members were written. So first God thought us up. If you've ever created anything, it starts with an idea. And you were an idea. God had an idea. And you were that idea. And then he made a blueprint. He put you in a book. Do you ever sketch out what you're going to do? You sketch it out. God is an amazing artist because he sketched every detail of you before he began to design you. He knows how many hairs are on your head. And I'm telling you, I keep him counting because I lose a lot every day. My brush is full. I go, you got that count, Lord? Why does he know how many hairs are on your head? Have you ever made a doll in a craft class? Can you? We used to make dolls with yarn hair, and you had to take individual pieces of yarn and sew them in. I thought I would go crazy. I made one. I never attempted it again. I thought, this is insane. And Hannah, you know how thick yarn is. Sewing that yarn on, I mean, there could be a million of our hairs in one old hunk of yarn because our hair is so fine. I couldn't even count how many pieces of yarn. I wouldn't even, after I sewed that doll head, I wouldn't even want to try to count those pieces of yarn. Why is it even important? I'd rather just buy a wig and sew that wig on that doll. good enough. She's got hair, you know. God could have just said, hair, you know, enough. Why does he even care about counting the hairs on our head? What difference does it make? I have no idea, but it's important to God. Everything's important to God. There's not one intricate thread of you that he just threw in to fill a gap. Perfect design, perfect engineer, perfect blueprint. So why do we say, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? I'm not like him. What's wrong with me? I can't do this. You're not supposed to, maybe, or you haven't been trained. But it's there in you if you're supposed to. So he said, yet being unperfect. And I was written, every member written in your book, which is in which in continuance were fashioned. He didn't just lay out a plan. He finished the plan. He continued it. We start things. I was in my 20s when someone said, you never finish anything you start. I went, yes, I do. And then I thought about it. No, I don't. I have a closet full of sewing projects. As soon as I ran into a problem, hit that closet. I'm not going to finish it. Start another one. It doesn't look right. Throw it in the closet. I was in the middle of hand crocheting a full-size Afghan, and I didn't want to finish it when someone said that. I said, I'm going to finish this because they're wrong. I'm going to finish this. Man, I had to finish that thing just to prove I could finish something, but I didn't want to. I didn't finish projects. I got in the middle of them. I ran into problems. God gets in the middle of you, but he's going to finish you. And he runs into problems. Sometimes you don't function the way he built you to function. Sometimes we don't obey. Sometimes we gripe and complain and even blame God for everything that's wrong. And sometimes, though he made us to crawl, we want to run. Sometimes, though he made us to sing, we don't want to sing. Sometimes we're just not working right. We're not perfected. We're not finished. But God will finish it, which in continuance were fashioned. God knew when he made us how we were going to function, how we were going to resist, who was going to hurt us. He knew everything that was going to happen. He could have prevented those hurts, but he doesn't prevent man. He allows man the free will. And in the free will, we damage each other. But God will repair. He will repair us. So how precious also are your thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. His thoughts, how great is the sum of them. You know what David was realizing this day? He was realizing who he is and all the awesome things God had planned for his life. He wasn't looking into a crystal ball. He was looking into the diamond and saying, you've got to be kidding. I'm a diamond like my God's a diamond, and there's all these facets to who I am, and God has given me a little peek into what he plans for my life, and wow, I can't even imagine doing the things God says I'm going to do. What a life it's going to be. And you say, God, how much you must have thought about me even to make this blueprint of who I'm going to be. If I should count them, your thoughts, all the aspects of me, they are more in number than the sand. When I wake up, I'm still with you. You know, I think David had one of those time rewinds where he actually got to see himself being thought up, planned out, and seeing a little touch of the future of who he's going to be and what he's going to do. And David said, you thought all of this for me? I think I'm in a dream. And when I wake up, God, I'm still with you. Just want to be with you because I want to live in this reality. I don't want to live down on the level where other people tear me down and tell me what they think of me. I don't want to live where I have not liked myself because I'm not like someone else. I want to live here. I want to stay here with you and who I really am. That's where I want to live. Isaiah 45, 9 through 13. Let's go read that one together. you lots of time to find it while I try to find it. You know, this thing needs a voice command, and I could tell it where to go, and it would get there in a hurry. Somebody ought to invent voice command for my iPad. It's God's way of slowing me down, because he knows I always go too fast. So why do we still say, but God, I don't like who I am. I want to be like her. I want to be like him. Why? I can't do this, and I don't like me. Why? Verse 9 says, woe unto him that strives with his maker. Let the potsherd strive with the potsherds of the earth. Shall the clay say to him that fashioned it, why make thou or thy work? He hath no hands. God, what have you made? Don't you have any hands? Look what you did to me. Woe unto him that says to his father, what did you beget? Or to the woman, what have you brought forth? Thus saith the Lord, the Holy One of Israel, and his maker, ask me of things to come concerning my sons and concerning the works of my hand. I made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens, and all their hosts have I commanded. I've raised him up in righteousness, and I will direct all his ways. He shall build my city, and he shall let go my captives, not for price or reward, saith the Lord of hosts. So God is saying, if the potter makes something a bowl, shall that bowl say, what have you done? I wanted to be a vase. Why did you make me a bowl? What, clay can't even talk. We were made from dirt. We are clay. We're all claymation. We are made out of dirt. God took us out of dirt with this awesome thought for our life to be a vessel and put himself in that vessel and let us reflect him in every way and come to do what his purpose is for us to do on this earth. And then we say, but I don't want to be a clay pot. I want to be a glass vase full of roses. I don't want to be a wash basin where they put soap and put the dirty hands in me and wash up. But you know what? You can't be a vase if you're not made to be one, because you won't like sitting on that shelf holding that rose. You'll keep thinking, I want to have some soap in my water. I need soap. You can't be happy unless you are what he made you to be. So we need to accept what we are. I mean, I tell you this before, my husband is, you know, Energizer Bunny, and you have not even seen him when he's released. That Energizer Bunny, God pulled the batteries on it. About 15 years ago, he pulled the batteries and said, now, Bunny, I'm going to put you over here, and I'll leave one battery so you can move a little bit. But when I put that other battery back in, boy, are they going to get a surprise. I saw him double batteried. And when he preached, he would run halfway up a wall, leap over pews. I mean, he was just, you would sit there and wonder, wow, is this guy on some drug or what, you know? He was full of energy, funny, and full of life, and full of God. And he would preach, and people would flood the altar weeping and repenting. Because God had released himself in Harvey, during a move of God, and God was flowing max speed inside of Harvey. Well, now God's been doing a long preparation, so he's calmed him down a bit. But at the same time he was doing that, I had not found out who I was. So instead of being gentle and quiet, I was shy and scared. So I would go with Harvey to a meeting and kind of hide somewhere so they wouldn't really, you know, connect me to what he is doing and look at me. I didn't want to be seen. Harvey used to say, my wife is wallpaper. She just comes in and blends with the wallpaper. You don't even know she's here. She doesn't want to be seen. And that was very true. When I went to school as a child, I walked in the front door and out the back door. And then they called my mom and said, she's gone again. I was terrified of people. I would not give a speech in speech class in school. I took straight F's. There is no way I would stand in front of people. First time God made me stand in front of people, he tricked me. I went with a girlfriend to learn deaf sign language. I just went with her. I didn't even want to learn it. I went with her because I like to hang out with her. And I just sat there quietly and did my lessons and learned it. And then one day God said, I want you to get in front of the whole church and interpret for the deaf. And I went, I don't think that's God, because I don't get in front of people. And God, if that's you, because I couldn't quit thinking it, if it's you, you're going to have the preacher of the church come to the sign language class and ask me personally to do it, and then I'll know it's you. The very next class, the preacher of the church came and asked me to do it, and I had to say yes. So I got up in front of the church. Now, they used to call me Stone Face because I didn't cry, I didn't laugh, I didn't talk. I was like non-expression. I was raised by parents that worked in a mental hospital. You could not shock me. I'd seen everything and heard everything, and I went up there and visited my mom, and you couldn't do anything those patients hadn't done in front of me, so nothing shocked me. People would tell me stuff, say stuff, carry on with horrible language, and I didn't change expression. Well, if you know anything about deaf work, it's all about expression. It's half acting. I didn't know I had an actor in me. Later in life, I directed all the drama in the church and the school and wrote the plays. I didn't know I had that in me. I didn't know I had expression in me. So I get in front of the deaf first Sunday morning. I was supposed to be the best in my class. I couldn't remember one word. I stood there before he started and I thought, and if God, I should think of the sign for God. Total blank. I said, God, I can't do this. I'm so scared. I can't remember one word. And then the preacher started talking, and my hands just started moving like lightning. And I went, where'd that come from? An expression. I was acting and expressing, and God inside of me came alive in front of people with all this expression, so much expression. I got in trouble after about a month because the preacher came and said, you stop that. I said, what am I doing? You're carrying on so much over there. They're looking at you instead of the singers, and the singers are mad. You're taking all the attention. I went, well, I can't help it. I don't know what else to do. That's what deaf people need. We were in a church where if a singer tapped her foot, she was in trouble. Women weren't allowed to be expressive. But God got expressive in me, and I couldn't help it. I didn't know I had an interpreter in me. I didn't know I had an actor in me. I didn't know I had a preacher in me, a teacher in me. I didn't know any of those things. I hated school. I didn't know I was going to be a teacher. I didn't know me. I didn't know those aspects of me. And when my husband was preaching and calling me wallflower, I believed him. I agreed with him. And I said, I like to watch the people, but I wish I could just be a little bird or a fly, and I could be in the room, and I could see them all and hear them all, but none of them would come and try to talk to me and scare me. I'm not wallpaper. God didn't design me to be a fly. But I didn't know me. I didn't know me. I watched movies like Anne of Green Gables. Anybody seen Anne of Green Gables? You know the friend Diane? I'd watch those movies and go, everybody loves Anne, and they don't like Diane because she's a boring, shy person. I want to be Anne. I want to be like Harvey. I want all that personality, and God forgot to put personality in me. But you know what I know now? I got the quiet place. I got the secret place. I got the peace of God. When the peace of God comes up in me, when I'm praying for somebody who's stressed and upset, and the peace of God rises up in me, and I pray for them, they melt into peace. I get to hear things from God that Harvey doesn't get to hear because he's running so fast. But I can sit still for hours and hours and hours and listen to the small, still voice of God. I got his gentleness. I got his peace. I'm fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God's gentle, quiet peace. I wouldn't trade it for anything because it's me. And I love getting to be that me. I appreciate Harvey. I appreciate. If he wasn't around, I might melt away. You know, he has to energize me now and then, and I have to melt him now and then so that he doesn't just, you know, bounce off the walls. I calm him. He energizes me. We all complement each other, but we can't be each other. I believe that we get wounded. I had verses to go on here, but I'm not going to, because I had verses to go on and prove to you that God is a diamond. It talks about him as a jasper on the throne. And when it talks about the rainbow, it does not just say a rainbow. It says a roundabout. Put sunshine on your little crystal ball. Rainbows don't go like this. They pop all over the room. God's a diamond, and his light shines, and his colors are massively displayed. He's a diamond because there's so many aspects to him, and you are a certain aspect of him, and within you, there's your own diamond with all your aspects, many aspects of God in you. And the first thing we have to do is realize I was created as one awesome reflection of God. I can't want to be like anyone else, but if I will learn to be me, if I will just learn to release God and let we come face to face with Jesus, and as we do, we're transformed into the same image. As we look at Jesus, we find out which reflections of him are in us. And it's like looking in a mirror. What do I love about God? What do I love about God? Therein I'm going to find what reflection I was made in, because that's the part of God I am mirrored from. Face to face. We with open face behold him. Open face means unmasked, vulnerable, completely open countenance, getting right up personal with who he is and letting him look into us. Now when I talked about the aspects of you like a diamond, when the light of God hits an aspect of you and you get free in that area, now in that area, you shine out to others and you reflect that part of God to everyone else. The way the glory of God will cover the face of the earth is through God shining out through us. And the more parts of you God gets a hold of, the more ways he shines out of you to other people, they will be drawn into God. So those parts of you that are damaged, it's like you got dirt on your mirror and you just can't see him. We behold through a glass darkly, Corinthians says, and he wants to wash that mirror. It might be your own dirt, in truth, of your own sin, maybe a bad attitude, maybe anger, maybe bitterness, unforgiveness, maybe self-hatred, maybe disobedience, and he wants to wash that away as you confess. But maybe it's dirt somebody else put on your mirror, lies about you, things they've said about you, where they've hurt you, where they've cut you down, and where you've taken that and believed it, and you've allowed that to block the reflection of who you are, and you need to come and say, God, is this who I am? Is this what you think about me? You know, there's unwanted pregnancies, and we grow up saying, I don't belong here, nobody wants me. If you were created, you were wanted. God wanted you to exist. That alone is enough. It doesn't matter if your parents wanted you. God wanted you. And he'll be your dad and your mom and your sister and your brother and your friend and your mate. Whoever is not in your life, all my expectation is in God. All my expectation is in God. I got in trouble for saying that in a church. I said, I am not supposed to put expectation in my husband to provide for me or to protect me or to love me, or to spend time with me. All that expectation should be put in my God. And people said, even the pastor said, you are wrong. We have a right to expect our mate to be what God told him to be. And I said, no. That's between them and God. I should put my expectation in him. And frequently, he will do it through my mate. I'll never forget a woman saying, nobody in my life touches me and brings the physical love that I need. And the whole time the lady was talking, her own daughter stood behind her, playing with her hair, touching, kissing her head, loving her. And the woman is saying, I just need physical touch. I need someone to love me. And finally, she was so irritated, she turned around and told her daughter, stop it! The expectation in God, the deliverance through whomever he says. We go to people and say, you're my pastor. Why didn't you call me and visit me? Because he's a sinful human, just like you. And because he's probably got 50 other people saying the same thing, and he doesn't have enough of him to go around. Or maybe he's wounded or hurt. Maybe he's full of sheep bites. Home licking his own wounds. But maybe God didn't tell him to. When our church got up to a certain number of women, we had a lot of women at one time in one of our churches, and they all wanted to be able to call me and have me be their best friend, and they wanted to call me day or night, some of them at 2 or 3 in the morning. You know, I'm not feeling well. I'm not feeling well now either, you know, because I need some sleep. But they all wanted to call me, and they were like, well, you don't call me back. And I heard that you called Joy over there 3 times last week, and you never called me. And I said, God, what do? I don't want to hurt anyone. And he said, pick up the phone when I tell you to pick it up, call who I tell you to call, and blame it on me. And I picked that up as a lifestyle. I love email because I can do it when I have time, and I can hang up, you know, click that computer off and walk away. When I'm talking to some people and they won't let me hang up, I'm surprised you got anything this morning because he made me pick the phone up twice and it took my whole morning. I'm sitting there in pajamas, not ready to go, messy hair, been on the phone talking to women all morning. And I said, okay, God, I have 20 minutes. And I don't know what I'm going to talk about. So we're either, I'm going to go in like last week and say, he didn't give me anything, let's just sit around and talk. Or you're going to have to give me something really quick. I shut my eyes and I saw that vision of that treasure chest. And he told me where to go and start getting these verses. And in 20 minutes, he gave me this for today. But I picked up the phone because he told me to. I didn't say I don't have time. Other times I could be sitting there doing nothing and that phone rings and I look at it. God, he said, nah, don't pick it up. And I don't pick it up. The only way I can justify whether I call you or don't or give you the attention you think you need is if God, oh, I'm sorry. You called me 5 times. God said, don't pick it up. Sorry. Go talk to him. I get to blame him. I'm not very social. That's not one of the aspects that he gave me. I'm not very social. Someone was on the phone the other day. She said, you know, I wanted you to come and see my new house. And I've been there 3 months and you never came. And I said, I know. I thought about it. I was going to. She says, well, I'm going to pray for you that God would free your time up so you can do the things you want to do. And I said, I appreciate you're going to pray for me, but please pray truth for me. I don't want to go to your house. I don't want to go to Patty's house or Tana's house or Hannah's house. I don't want to go out to Glenn and Roxanne's house. And if we took a show of hands, how many times have I been there since you've known me? Maybe 2 in 7 years. I don't want to go to anybody's house. I'm still a loner. I like to stay home. I don't want to go out of town. When I go across the state to visit my kids, I'm watching the clock. Can I go home yet? I don't want to go anywhere. So I told her, if that's a flaw in me, that I should want to go to all your houses and socialize and drink coffee and talk on the phone, and if I should be doing that, then pray that for me. Because I don't want to do it. It's either I'm not created to do it, or I have some damaged, wounded thing in me where I'm not willing to do it. So pray God reveals the truth about that. Shine into that aspect of me and set me free and I'll come over. Or I don't have to because that's not who I am. I'm pretty blunt, I'm pretty outspoken, and I'm not very social. But I think that's just who I am, you know? So you just have to take me like I am, and if I'm wrong, you got to pray for me. And there's things you don't like about me, but there's things I don't like about you either. And we need to just love each other, you know? I love this. God gave me this week, and I love it. It came in play this morning. People used to call me and say, well, I'm not going to church because I hate God. God isn't right. If he's so good, why'd he do this? Why'd he do that? Why didn't he help me when I called out? And why didn't he do this? And I mean, there's railing against God. I used to get so mad. How dare you talk about my God like that? You're ungrateful. God did all kinds of stuff for you, and I just want to tell them off. How dare they treat God that way? And you know what he told me? You're judging them, and your pride is uglier to me than their sin. Because they're speaking out of ignorance. They're just speaking out of ignorance. But the verse that I find that says, God said, I weep in secret places for your pride. Pride is the ugliest thing to God. So when I'm judging somebody else's sin, God's going in the corner and weeping because pride got me again. So I don't dare judge somebody else because then I'm uglier. So it's okay if you don't like things about me and I don't like things about you, but we just can't judge each other. We just have to pray for each other. We're never going to like everything about each other because we've all these reflections of God that come out of us. There's probably about 50 more of the other guy that's coming out of us at the same time, and that's what we look at, you know? So we have to live in mercy because that's God. We have to live in forgiving each other all those faults and failures. What I want you to do today, and we haven't done this for a while, I want to create a vision for you. If it works for you, good. If it doesn't, that's okay. But I'd like you to close your eyes. And I'd like you to picture that big, beautiful treasure chest of God with jewels all over it. And the lead is wide open with the satin lining. You can see those treasures. And I want you to, you have a choice. You can reach in there and find that big diamond. It takes two hands to lift it out. Or you can climb in that chest, sit down in all that, and find that diamond and hold it in your lap. But get a hold of that big diamond. And that big diamond is you. It's you. How you are reflected of God. And I want you to say, God, I'm going to look in this diamond. I'm just going to look at all these colors and reflections, and I'm inviting you to look in me, God. I'm inviting you to shine your light of truth and revelation and love, and I want you to shine into some aspect of my life this morning. And I will face you in that aspect. Whether you want to pour love on me, whether you want to expose my sin, whether you just want to show me some good thing about me I haven't seen. But I want to agree with you. And I want you to shine truth and shine love and shine healing into me in some aspect so that I can see another part of me, who I am, who you are in me, who you want me to be. And I can accept that and begin to let you transform me into who you made me to be. So in other words, God, I'm offering you me today. Wide open me, here I am. Look into me any way you want, over any issue of me you want, and bring me face to face with you. And I invite you to just spend some time. Some of you are able to do that here. You can sit down for a while. You can go lay on our couches up here. Go sit in the chairs back there. Lay on the floor. Go to a table if you like to journal while you're hearing God. And if you need to leave, there's no judgment. You can take this home with you and deal with it later. But somehow, today, find your time and ask God to shine his light and reveal another aspect of who you are so that you can get free to let God shine out of you in a new way. You're going to love yourself. You have to, because you're just like your daddy. Thank you, Jesus. Father, we give this to you. Without you, it's only words that can hit minds, possibly even hearts. But God, for it to go into the spirit where everything changes, where the miracles happen, for it to have that powerful effect, it has to have life, and you are the life, and you are the light. And unless, God, you quicken this word by your very presence, it cannot transform us. So we invite you. We invite you. Whether it's right this minute or follow us out of here, and in any moment you choose, we invite you. And we want to come face to face. Truth, accepting, being transformed. Because we want Jesus to own every part of our life and shine out of us to others. We depend on you for the life. And we love you, Lord, and we thank you for your mercy and your patience and your love. We thank you for making me me. Reminds me of a song. I just thank you, Jesus, for making me me. Amen.